Night two is going to begin with a bang, a legitimate semi-main event match, a match that you could have made a great argument for main eventing night one instead of Cody and Randy Orton, and some people thought they were going to go there. My guess is they would have, except that this is going to be probably too short for that to be the case, and that, again, that's putting a lot of pressure on Obafemi to be in a main event slot. He will be in there against Brock Lesnar. And when I talked about this before with Jacob Fatu versus Drew McIntyre, that would be sort of like the ultimate sort of much longer version of the concentrated greatness of Brock Lesnar Goldberg at WrestleMania 33 in 2017. This is going to be sort of half of that. It's going to be about half as good, half as long, whatever. Better than the greatness of Brock and Goldberg, because it's going to be longer and they're going to be throwing a lot of bombs and whatever. But Oba is probably still too green. Brock is probably at this point too old to be able to replicate what Jacob Fatu and Drew McIntyre are going to do. But I almost feel like comparing it to that match is unfair. This is going to start off night two with a real bang. And like I said, I think a longer version of that match that was so epic as a 5-minute classic in 2017.
I'm going to disagree with you, Rick. I do not think this is going to be longer than that. I think by the way, this is the match that I'm looking forward to the most of both nights, okay?
Okay.
And I think this is going to be under 5 minutes, and okay. I think Obafemi is going to squash Brock Lesnar, and I think Brock Lesnar is going to make Obafemi look like $1 million. Brock's going to try for Suplex City. He's not going to be able to do it. He's going to go for the F5. He'll F5 him. Oba will kick out at one, get back up, kick him in the face, and that's it. I think Brock Lesnar's entire goal here is to make this kid look like $1 million on his way out the door. And I think this is going to be somewhere in between the Goldberg-Lesnar squash of Survivor Series and the Goldberg-Lesnar WrestleMania match. I think Brock might get one offensive move in to sell the fact that, you know, it has no effect on Oba. And I think Oba's just going to squash him. I think he's going to put his foot on his chest. I think he's going to pin him 1, 2, 3, and you're going to see Paul Heyman stand with that aghast look on his face, similar to when the streak broke, like, what the hell just happened? And I think by putting it on ESPN, you make a star.
Fascinating. I might have agreed with you if not for the fact that the build has been very one-sided. The build has been so
pro-Oba. I think that's on purpose, because traditional wrestling booking says, well, Brock's got to get his heat back. I don't think Brock cares at 47 about getting his heat back, okay? Brock's done enough. I think on this run, Brock Lesnar is here to, give back to the business, and I think he's going to give back in a big way by bucking the trend of what traditional booking is. I think it was Brock Lesnar's entire idea for have him get flattened out the entire time. And then to go in there, it's an MMA-style booking. And then, you know, Oba destroys him in under 3 minutes. Well, it just says, oh my God, this guy is legit. You know, if Brock puts him a fight, then it's like, okay. No, if Oba comes in and just squashes him, he's made.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of logic to what you're saying. I still believe my scenario, but there's a lot of logic to what you're saying. The only thing that of logic that doesn't really factor in is the fact that you're going to have to basically feature this next match on ESPN when, in fact, it'll be an entertaining car crash, but I don't know if this is necessarily the match you want to put on ESPN since it's so thrown together. Six-pack ladder match for the Intercontinental title, Penta the champion versus Javon Evans versus Dragon Lee versus J.D. McDonough versus Rusev versus Rey Mysterio. And look, six guys who can absolutely kill it in a setting like this, no question about it. But thrown together, and you and I were joking about this off air, a thing of like, even worse than like the Phantom Intercontinental Title Tournament of 1979 or the WWF Championship Tournament of 1963 from Buenos Aires back in the day here. This is a thing. Those were at least Phantom tournaments. This was a retrospective tournament. Like, hey, remember the matches on that obscure streaming show? Well, we've now decided that they were qualifying matches for this ladder match. And to which I'm looking at this like, how freaking incompetent can you be? Okay. We talk about like, you know, making a build for WrestleMania or whatever. Like, you couldn't schedule out over the course of like several weeks. Talk about proof that the booking is absolutely week to week to week with nothing, with no kind of sense of what happened afterwards or comes next. This is the kind of thing where, again, you should have been doing qualifying matches over a period of time here, but no, they end up going the way that they go. And again, I wonder how an ESPN audience is going to react to this. I mean, it's going to be an entertaining car crash, and you have guys who are going to be exceptional in this climate as far as being able to do the spectacular stunts. But I just kind of wonder to what end. I wonder the degree to which, I think the live audience is going to be key. If it gets over with the live audience, maybe it does to the ESPN audience at home, but who knows?
The beginning of this match is gonna like drag because the crowd is gonna be so amped up from the Obafemi Brock Lesnar spectacle that they're gonna be like, okay, and like I think Penta gonna react for him coming out. Obviously, Ray. Nope, they won't care about anybody else other than those two.
Okay. Well. I could see that being the case. The funny thing is that like Rusev supposedly left AEW because of his placement in like random matches like this, only to go here. And like, this is by far the biggest thing he's done since he got back, is to be placed randomly in this ladder match for the Intercontinental title. So for Rusev, meet the new home, same as the old home, Jake Digman. That's what it seems like.
No crap. That's, he's yeah.
All right, Jakey having some technical issues again here, and he may be potentially dropping. We shall see. You back? Okay.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
All right, last thing I said was,
Jake is doing the Dr. Frankenfurter gimmick right now. I see you quiver with anticipation. are you back now?
can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. You were about to make your point, and then you went all Doc Frankenfurter on us.
Well, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I don't know. I just think this is to put a button on it, you know. New home is the same as the old home, and you know, hopefully by the end of it, one or two people see. Oh, hey, guys, cool. The ESPN audience goes. I just feel like it's a thrown together, and it's just filler, unfortunately.
It is. It is absolute filler. The next match, I find it very. You're going to shake your head at the analogy I'm going to make here. I find it very fitting that this next match. Jade Cargill versus Rhea Ripley as Jade Cargill defends the women's world championship or the women's championship match. I find it fitting that this match is in Las Vegas because it reminds me of a past pro wrestling match in Las Vegas, Jake Digman. Would you like to take a stab at which one I'm talking about in this regard? You probably won't come close.
No, I won't come close. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Halloween Havoc 97. Or 98, rather. 98. Diamond Dallas Page trying to carry Goldberg to a passable match, which he was able to do. And Rhea Ripley is, I think, as good as, or no offense to DDP, better than DDP. Rhea Ripley is one of the best in the world. She can carry a lot of wrestlers out there, even somebody as green as Jade Cargill. And again, Jade Cargill has continued to be, you know, $1 million body, 10 cent execution, we'll call it. I'm not going to talk brain or whatever, but at the very least, execution in the ring. And again, just same as she was when she was in AEW, where everything has to be booked around her limitations. And that's the way that wrestling has been since time immemorial. You know, you go back to the early days of Nikita Koloff and Goldberg, of like, they had to be booked as monsters because you couldn't count on them to do anything else.
Right.
That's how Jade continues to be. And there have been, it's because, because she's all muscly. What do you expect? Rhea Ripley used to be all muscly. She never sucked in the ring as bad as Jade Cargill does. So it's like, just because you're a muscle person doesn't mean that you necessarily are going to be a stiff. But, Mrs. Brandon Phillips here is going to get carried to maybe a passable match if she's lucky. But I don't know. I would have zero expectations of this match. I mean, it might qualify as a semi-main event match legitimately because it is Rhea Ripley in a women's title match and whatever. And Jade Cargill is at least a name that they're pushing a lot. But, yeah, that's where, you know, the middle part of this show, they could really, really lose the crowd because who knows what they're going to be like after the ladder match. And I think this is going to be a bathroom break match there, which I would normally never say about a Rhea Ripley match.
It'll be interesting to see. See, Rick, you're going about this all wrong when watching Jade Cargill matches. You're going by the old star rankings and all that. No, you got to watch the Jade Cargill matches to see, watch it to see how bad it could possibly be. And if it's not that bad, it's considered a win.
Oh, because of the bar of expectations. Okay. All right.
It's so low. It's, you got to set it real low. I mean, yeah. Limbo champion of the world low.
Well, you know, I think again, this match here is just, I expect it to blow chunks. And again, if somehow or another it doesn't, then just give Rhea Ripley all the Wrestling Observer Newsletter awards right now for the year 2026 if she can rescue this somehow and carry Jade Cargill's carcass to any kind of semblance of an acceptable match.
This match is in the Allegiant Dome, not the Tokyo Dome. You ain't going to win any of those Wrestling Observer Newsletter awards. Come on now.
I see you working, Jake Jennings Stigman. That is a great reference there. And I will say this, that like, as far as like how bad does Jade Cargill suck, do you know what wrestler was working with her the most when she was in AEW? Do you know who she was being trained by?
Yeah, crap. Was it
Amdrag, baby. Amdrag,
oh, Dragons,
baby.
Dragon. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you could suck this bad after being trained by Brian Danielson, you are hopeless. So just, I don't know what to say other than this match is probably going to blow chunks. If it doesn't,
you'll be sitting there with bells on and popcorn and ready to give it 5 stars.
This is when you would want to bust out the Brian Alvarez -5 stars t-shirt for this match. And that would be my expectation. Anything above that is a win for them. The next matchup here for the United States Championship, I referenced before, and this is not going to be nearly on the level of the aforementioned Bret Hart, Steve Austin deal from 97. But I have the same feel when you're looking at this match here. You've got Sami Zayn, the champion, who has become more unlikable in the eyes of the crowd. Again, as kind of a whiner, right? As Bret Hart was getting to be perceived when he turned heel versus Trick Williams, not even going to begin to compare him to Austin, but the crowd getting behind him, notwithstanding the fact that he's not pandering to the crowd. The crowd finding Trick Williams to be pretty cool. It's a thing where, again, I would expect the same outcome here. Not that Trick Williams is going to be unconscious, bleeding out the forehead or anything like that, but Sami Zayn's going to screw him. Trick Williams will complete the turn by getting the sympathy of the crowd. Sami Zayn will complete the turn by getting the complete and utter enmity of the crowd for screwing over their new hero, Trick Williams. That's how I see it going, and I think that this will be sort of a rare, unmitigated win for the Knights of the either of the Knights of the show here. I expect this to be a strong point.
I agree with everything you just said.
Okay. Isn't it great when life works that way? Okay.
Sometimes, all right. You know, all I can do is just reiterate about everything you just said. It's kind of where I see it going.
Okay, yeah. And again, they could do a lot worse than that. The booking that they've been doing points to this outcome. So just
go ahead. And they have a chance to make a real big babyface star with Trick Willie. I like his shtick.
They do have that chance, and it's a thing where, again, like I said, this is where they might start to prove me wrong, because where I've been saying that, like, I keep hearing about this endless line of guys from NXT that are going to be superstars. Well, again, you have to prove it, and what you have to do, ultimately, is concentrate on a handful of guys at a time here, and since they brought up Bron Breakker, it's been hit or miss with him, but probably more hit than miss. So Bron Breakker was not exactly the first in this wave, but sort of was at the front of it. You're now seeing it with Obafemi. You're seeing it I think, with Trick Williams here. So you're seeing guys start to emerge. And then Jacob Fatu, again, not an NXT guy, but still as one of the guys that they're looking to build around for the future. So in terms of Obafemi, in terms of Jacob Fatu, whether he wins or loses, he needs to come out of this very strong in the eyes of the crowd, Trick Williams. The thing I think that we would agree upon in one of the rare optimistic things that I would say for the two nights of the show is they have a chance to really, really kind of establish some guys for the future as far as like the next wave of guys. And Trick Williams, as you said, is right there in that mix.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. And that needs to be a priority in this. You know, we mentioned, you know, not being able to make stars, have a chance on this night to make two of them in Obafemi and Trick Williams.
Absolutely, yes. And I think to further establish Jacob Fatu as well, because I think he's a main eventer in the future as well. The next matchup here, again, this is one where in the spot they have it, you would look at it like it might be a plausible semi-main event match. I don't regard it that way because it's just been kind of going on forever. The Demon Finn Balor versus Dominic Mysterio in a singles match. And we've been hearing a lot of talk here about, I might as well at least make a funny point about some of the depravities of the world here. We've been hearing a lot about, you know, the 21st century and like, oh, one of the worst things is forever wars, America and their forever wars. I think we've had forever wars that have gone on longer than the Finn Balor babyface tease, which they have eventually gone with. And it's like, this is a guy where, again, when they first called him up from NXT, and again, he had the shoulder injury right off the bat. Thanks for mutton, Seth Rollins. But, you know, again, Finn Balor at one point in time, I'm not going to say at like a Prince Devitt level of greatness, but, you know, he was close at one point in time. And ever since then, I've just seen him as like, man, this guy should be so much bigger than he is. And there's nothing about the way that he was in Judgment Day or has left Judgment Day that's made me see him that way even less. He's a guy that I think a good part of his prime has been wasted in WWE. Dominic Mysterio is a guy that they're building for the future, and he's a dominant part of what they're doing with AAA, which, you know, as he probably should be. And this match will probably get over with the crowd, I would say, more than it deserves to, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I guess they would regard that as a success if it did. If the Dominic Mysterio heat can basically carry this match, much like Rhea Ripley has to physically carry the match with Jade Cargill, I think the Dominic Mysterio heat has to carry this match, Jake.
I agree with you, and I also think at this point, you know, that the Demon almost has to win because he's lost like the last three matches he's had here. So if he doesn't win, then especially to someone like Dom, who's supposed to be like a sniveling little weasel of a heel, he's already like one foot in the grave. At this point, you might as well put the entire character in the grave if he doesn't, you know, put out a dominant performance against Dirty Dom, who also can put over somebody like $1 million and not lose any heat over it at the same time. Maybe the segues into a feud with Finn Balor and AAA with Dom. I'm not sure what they do with that, but it's been the slowest of slow builds. It'll be a spectacle match. It'll be interesting to see, you know, whenever you have the Demon on the card, it's a spectacle. It'll be interesting to see what Dom does to counter that and, you know, what other Judgment Day involvement, what other spectacle is added to it. But, one thing I will comment on was several years ago when we were talking about, you know, the next face of the luchadors on one of these breakdowns, and I told you it's Dominic Mysterio. By that. It's Dominic Mysterio.
And I will say, too, that, like, to me it sort of exemplifies the whole thing of, like, why I prefer pro wrestling to sports entertainment. Because I'm not going to diminish anything that Dominic did to get over, but it's like, he's not a crappy worker. He's not Jade Cargill with two left feet or anything like that. But it's like people compare him to Eddie Guerrero, but it's like he's basically Eddie Guerrero if Eddie was like mid in ring and had the whole Latino heat greatness as a character. And I think Dominic stands out by the standards of today. I think if he were in there with Eddie Guerrero of the early 2000s, I think he'd be exposed. But compared to what there is today with this crop, I think, you know, what he does in ring, if you want to call it that, kind of, you know, it gets over to a decent enough degree. So, you know,
I think that was a pretty good backhanded compliment that you wouldn't mean to be a backhanded compliment, because anybody in the ring with 2000 Eddie Guerrero from today would be the drizzling shits. So that, like, you know, I'll take that compliment.
I don't know that anybody would be. I don't know that Brian Danielson or Kenny Omega.
2026. Okay. No. Danielson, no. Not anymore.
Okay. Omega, Ospreay, Kyle Fletcher.
There he is. There's your boy.
Yeah. Take a shot at home, everybody.
Hey, I got to tell you this. With Kyle Fletcher, I saw one of his promos popped up on my feed on YouTube, right? And he's like wearing a suit and everything. I forget what he was talking about. Oh, he was reading something. And it was absolutely just made me pop. And I'm like, because the last time I was like, I have to compliment the amount of character development and progression he has done now. He's not just some random guy. He's actually, like, developing his own personality and, you know, good.
He's the good proto star. As far as
building a star. Yeah, and they've done a really good job with that.
The proto star, and he's done a tremendous job with it. And that's where, again, you know, to me, he's like a full spectrum kind of a thing, because he's built his character the same way that Dominic Mysterio has, but he backs it up in ring like very few in the world today. I have to be honest as far as my biases about the product and everything like that. I think the nice things that I would have to say about Dominic Mysterio can't help but be backhanded, because Dominic Mysterio is getting to be towards the apex of sports entertainment. And I grant him that, and he deserves credit for that. It's also kind of reminding me why I'm not that much into sports entertainment as opposed to pro wrestling. So, you know, it's like, that's the kind of thing that people like if they like that kind of thing, I guess is how the saying goes, or something like that. So we get to the main event of night two, which traditionally has been the real main event of WrestleMania the last couple of years. It is for the World Heavyweight Championship. And you have the reigning defending world champion, Charles Manson Punk, versus Roman Reigns. And that's how we AEW loyalists refer to him, Jake Dingman. That's how any elite stands refer to him. And again, I talked about it before with the main event on night one, that it's built around Pat McAfee, WCW 2000 style booking of, you know, characters going on screen and saying things like, who booked this crap and whatever. But here, this is very elevated compared to that. It's one of the main event participants saying to the other main event participant, who would ever want to watch you? You're too old. So once again, let's just, you know, kind of.
Which the funny thing is, the guy calling the 47-year-old old is 40.
Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. And like, and here's
like
the thing,
if it was
too.
MJF saying, hey, you're old, okay, we'll go with that. But right. Like Roman Reigns, you're almost as old as him.
Yes, exactly. And I actually believe it's good. And it is one of those things where, again, you know, CM Punk's been back since the end of 2023. And as weird as this is to say, for Roman Reigns, who was foisted on us for an interminable number of WrestleManias as a quote-unquote babyface, John Cena style, of where he would be the guy getting booed, and then had the interminable reign as the tribal chief here, which just went on way too long because it was the same thing time after time after time, endless amount of
interference. Got cut way too short. We could have passed Hulk Hogan by now.
Yeah.
Just saying. Could've. Anyway, go on. Could have.
Yeah. And
they cheered him anyway. So, I mean, come on, just let him go away long enough. It's the Fed. If I go away long enough, you will cheer me when I come back.
Well, I was going to say,
some traitor who had to go, you know, start a little side project, had to come back and make his dead daddy proud.
Yes. And so when you look at it, I mean, it seems incredible to say this, because of, again, all the WrestleManias of the 2010s that sucked having Roman Reigns on top, and the heel run as champion that went on way too long. But compared to where CM Punk is right now, Roman Reigns winning this is the fresher option, because we haven't seen babyface world champion Tribal Chief. And that has some legs in it. That's a thing where, again, because and Roman Reigns is even openly saying he can see the end. The end is in sight, whatever. For CM Punk, this has been his last great run on top. Great's not the word I'd use, I guess, but he'd call it that. And be the same thing with Roman Reigns, is that last run on top as a babyface out there, take on all comers and basically be, you know, the babyface version of the heel Tribal Chief who got so stale with all the outside interference and everything like that. Roman Reigns finally being a successful babyface world champion to cap off his at least active in-ring career. I think that's where this is going. People have speculated about a turn one way or another. They're not going to turn Roman yet again because, again, it's like even though it was, you know, 2 years ago, the whole, you know, Tribal Chief as a heel main event or whatever, that still feels stale, even though it's 2 years old. They're not going back there. CM Punk at this point as a heel, to be honest with you, and again, maybe this is the bitter elite stand in me, but I don't think CM Punk is ever going to want to be a heel in WWE just because of the things you have to do to be a successful heel and the things you have to say. And that, like, I think CM Punk doesn't want to have it be perceived like, see, he really is a locker room cancer. Well, he's like, once you're a heel, you got to commit. And then when you commit to it, all these other things come with it. I don't think CM Punk has any interest in ever being a heel ever again. I think these guys basically just kind of go their separate ways after this match. CM Punk gets diverted into something else. Roman Reigns is the babyface champion. That's how I see it going.
Yeah, I can see that. And I had an idea, but you kind of talked me out of it where I was thinking of this. So I'm going to take the happy medium on this one. I think Roman Reigns wins the championship with the unexpected and inadvertent help of a fresh heel turn Sami Zayn that makes you, well, because we've mentioned this is a jumping off point. So then everyone's going, is the bloodline back together? What's he doing? And then, you know, Sami Zayn, who is the United States champion, does the acknowledgement of his tribal chief, and then Roman Reigns is just kind of like, I don't know what this is. And of course, you know, because we're selling the next show, the speculation is there, is the bloodline back together? Or, you know, does Roman know what's happening? Is this where we're going with it? And then you could also leave that to a Zayn v. Punk feud, because Roman's still going away. You know, he's going to be on TV every week. So there's your TV feud for CM Punk, and it freshens up Sami Zayn as well, and also opens up a lot of doors to, if they want to eventually reunite the bloodline as heels, they can, or, you know, depends on what they want to do, but it's just like, I that's the I would reunite them, but I'm a bloodline mark, so I'll be fully honest, much as you are for, you know, Kyle Fletcher. I am a mark for the bloodline, you know. I like the dominant run. Was it stale? Yes. And I enjoyed it because it was consistent. And I like consistency. And when the bloodline was on top, stadium sold out. Now it is what it is. But I also, you sold me on the idea of Roman doing it by himself, and, you know, to cement that babyface run that they always wanted and they never got. So it's going to be intriguing. I think we can both agree that Punxsutawney Phil isn't leaving with the World Heavyweight Championship that night, though, and which is for the best. And I just wonder if we'll ever get the payoff to the Punk v. Rollins feud, or the Roman v. Rollins feud, for that matter, too. Who knows?
Yeah, those remain to be settled down the road, potentially. And, yeah, I think good old company man Punk is not going to be leaving with the title here. And I your scenario is interesting, but I think my scenario is better for business, because I think having Roman cemented, this is moment mania, after all. And the whole thing of Roman gets that moment. Roman finally becomes the guy that they thought he was going to become when they put the Shield together in 2012. This is the crowning moment of where he is a wildly popular, wildly over franchise babyface champion. And even though it's the last big run of his career, in all likelihood, it's, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like, in a way, you know, John Cena is now officially the man. He has taken the baton from The Rock in 2013 when John Cena was starting to wind down his career.
Right, exactly the same thing.
What is it with this company?
Much like The Rock was now the man when he took it from Hulk Hogan in 2002 and then immediately left it.
Yes, yes. This company, man, like they wait until, you know, it's not on the back nine of a guy's career, like the 16th hole of a guy's career. And then it's like, you're the man now. Oh, great. This last year or so, if that, is really going to be something. I've wasted a dozen years getting here, but this next year better really count. But I mean, that's where I think they're going to go. Your idea is intriguing because of what it sets up, but it's like, I don't think, well, like, because this is Moment Mania, they want that moment at the end of the, and the fireworks are going off and the people are going bat shiz and whatever, as opposed to like, what just happened here? Is the bloodline back together? Tune in tomorrow night. Like, your idea is intriguing, but they're not going to sacrifice your idea for the moment, I think.
I agree with you.
Okay, yeah.
So watch them do my idea.
Which would be the dumbest thing ever, because, again, if that happens, it'll be like they can still give Roman that reign. They can still give him the babyface reign where he's on top, and it's like he's the dominant guy of today. But they're going to start it in a way that doesn't fit where they're going with it. I think they're going to want to start the reign in a way that is going to be consistent with it. And if I may make this point, you look at the whole John Cena farewell tour of last year, which we can point out all the things that went wrong with that, that this isn't necessarily the equivalent for Roman, because he's only teased out in a couple of interviews like, hey, this is my last contract or whatever. But like, we know the clock is ticking with this guy as far as the amount of time he's got left in this. Honestly, with everything that he's put his body through for having somebody where, again, I think he's beaten leukemia into remission like twice. And you hate to say this, and I don't want to put this out into the world, but nothing is promised in this life. You never know what could happen with that there. So you have to sort of live for the here and now, and particularly if you're booking Roman Reigns, and you need this reign to be impactful for him. So that's where I think they're going to go in that way and cement him as heading up one of the two brands. They're going to do their draft thingy soon enough here, which is going to, you know, move around guys. I will say,
four people.
Yeah, but like, and I also think as well that like, where for as critical as I was and for as much as I buried the whole thing at the outset here, I will be a little bit more fair as you and I are bringing this full circle. And in a sense of like, it is not easy to book for something like WrestleMania in the sense of you essentially have too many promotions here, and you do most of the year anyways keep them separate. But for WrestleMania, you are tasked with making, quote unquote, the biggest matches. And so that's a thing where you have to pluck from here and from there. You can do linear booking on a show throughout the year. You can do, and even going up to SummerSlam, because there's not really much, I think, in the way of crossover stuff with SummerSlam. With WrestleMania, where the crossover stuff is sort of baked in the cake of where we're going to pluck from here and there to try and get the best matches and everything like that, that's what really kind of makes it tough, because you have so many different possibilities. It is easy to overthink it. And if there's one thing that they're excellent at, PhD level at, it is overthinking what's on their roster, Jake Digman. So the very structure of this that the corporate system demands, you know, a separate thing for Raw and for SmackDown, I continue to think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if it was one brand. And if you did, you know, enough stuff back and forth, and yeah, you could have maybe, you know, three secondary titles or something AEW-like, you know, to kind of, you know, pad it out between the shows. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, it'll only be the same guys on TV on both shows. I'm like, well, that's if you want it to be that way. If you were committed to trying to build a bigger roster, you could push more guys at a time. You could experiment with things more. But as long as they're, you know, it locked into the whole thing, as it looks like they are from now until the end of time, of separate brands, I think that makes it harder to book a show like WrestleMania because of the expectation that you will be crossing over to try to make the best of it from both sides here.
And that's a whole other topic that we could talk about for another whole 2 hours if we really wanted to. And maybe one day we will, but today is not that day.
today's not that day, but I wanted to bring up that point towards the end because just like in fairness, for as much as I've buried them on the other points here, I think the system that they have makes it harder for a show like this. Do I think they could have done a hell of a lot better? Of course I do. Do I think that there were injuries that got in the way? Yes, there were. It made it harder, but I think it's way too easy to give them slack on that kind of thing as opposed to what this ended up being. I predict that it will be a show at the end of the day where people will say, for the most part, they didn't love it, but they liked it. That's how I think it's probably going to get over with most of their audience. You think that too? Okay.
Yeah, same.
All right. All right. I think
it's going to be like, you know, inoffensive wrestling. Perfectly acceptable wrestling, you know. Not going to be remembered forever, but also not be like, you know, one of the greatest. I think it'll just be there, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is.
It won't be the WrestleMania 30 of today, but it also won't be the WrestleMania 11 of today. What would be the prototype? You were there. No, it wouldn't be the WrestleMania 18 of today, right? Because what's going to be Hogan Rock? There's no Hogan Rock
nothing.
On this show.
Yeah, there's nothing.
The WrestleMania 15 of today? I don't know. That could.
Yeah, I mean, that could rack our brains for a while. Trying to
see. I didn't mean to give us a brain teaser on the way out the door.
WrestleMania 26.
Okay, yeah. The WrestleMania 26 of today. I think they would take that. They would take that if it were to happen. I wonder what's going to be the Shawn Undertaker of this show.
It's going to be Gunther and Rey Mysterio, but now it's not.
Could be Gunther and Seth Rollins. You know what? Let me end it on this note. What do you think is going to be the best match out of both nights? I'm going to say Gunther, Seth Rollins, narrowly ahead of Fatu and McIntyre.
For the kind of people who like to rate things in star ratings at Tokyo Domes, that's going to be the best match of the night. I think as far as a star-making performance goes, it's going to be Brock Lesnar and Obafemi. But as far as you're doing, like, you know, star ratings and, like, moves and false finishes and kickouts and all that stuff, I think it's going to be Rollins and Gunther by far.
Okay.
With a close second being Jacob Fatu and Drew McIntyre.
Okay, so we agree on the 1-2
right
in that regard, if we're using that criteria. Okay. Yep. Well, all I can say is great minds think alike, and there's no greater mind to discuss this with. And also, when we talk about it on the show, MMA as well, I have to mention this here to get this in. Of course, Caged Thunder, the Northeastern Ohio-based MMA product out there, the finest MMA on God's green earth that you are going to find. My man, Jake Digman, right there in the mix with it, ring announcer, behind the scenes impresario. Jake, talk about that here for a second. I know you've got some great events coming up that people will be able to sample.
Yeah, we got, we're bringing back kickboxing. We're doing Caged Thunder Presents Extreme Kickboxing. Happy to work with my buddy Ryan Madigan again. We're co-promoting this one with Extreme Kickboxing. It's called Extreme Kickboxing Vengeance. I'll be hosting that event. It'll be taking place on next Saturday. April 18th. It'll be taking place on April 18th at Chaparral's in Akron, Ohio. It's got a lot of legends of the kickboxing world, aforementioned Ryan Madigan, Pete Sugarfoot Cunningham will be there, as well as pros Jason Jaguar Jones. He's fought all over the world. He's taken on Slick Will Calhoun, and then one of the other pro fights I'm really looking forward to on that one, two guys from the MMA cage, two of the most exciting fighters with knockout power in mixed martial arts in the area, in the regional scene. Undead Jeremy Riley is going to be taking on Will Baxter, and I think that's going to be quite the show, quite the spectacle between those two. We've got a lot of MMA guys that have competed in Caged Thunder. They're going to be on that kickboxing show. Tickets are only $25 for GA for that one. They're on sale. There's still some good seats available for that at CagedThunderMMA.com. And then we're really excited. May 23rd, we're coming to the Huntington Convention Center in downtown Cleveland, Ohio for the first time ever. It's going to be Caged Thunder 39, Fight Night in the Land, take on the old Fight Night in the Flats name. It's Fight Night in the Land. It's going to be just announced the main event tonight, 6-0 pro featherweight Ben Mudbug Williford. He's going to be taking on this a guy who's 4-1 prospect out of Florida, Luis Perez, I believe. believe is Luis Prince Perez. I just shared a video on the Cage Thunder page of this dude all sorts of trash talking. You know, when there's trash talking, it's going to be a lot of fun. We got a loaded amateur card of the Ohio Championship, the OCL, Ohio Championship League. Their flyweight champion is fighting the Cage Thunder flyweight champion. Dom Savoca is the Cage Thunder flyweight amateur flyweight champion. He's going to be taking on the OCL amateur flyweight champion, Ray the Slim Reaper. Ray the Slim Reaper will be taking on Dom Savoca. That's going to be one hell of a fight. Chase Arcangelo out of Cleveland, Ohio, the dude who brought Wardlow to the showdown in Canton, will be making his pro debut. He's going to be taking on Sam McGuigan. There's also going to be our former amateur featherweight champion as well, Cody the Warrior Wilson. He'll be making his debut against James Haley and James F. and Haley. A lot of people, including our own commentator, Norm Carrero, flat out said, dude, you're being set up for this fight. And Haley took exception to that and is out to prove that, no, I'm not. And I'm going to be intrigued to see that one. We've got bunch of great more on there. Casey Malone coming off his MMA debut, successful win in his MMA debut, taking on Carter Cook, son of Ohio MMA legend John Cook, used to own Evolve MMA. He's back on the card. This one is stacked top to bottom. The show is already halfway, if not three quarters of the way, sold out, and it's all the way in May. So this one is going to be quite the spectacle. I'm excited for both of them, and I'm just excited to be a big part of the Northeast Ohio combat sports scene and just continuing to do what we do. From day one, as you've known me for 20 years, I've always said I don't compare what we do to what other people are doing. I hope they put on the best product they can for the audience that's coming to see their events, because I know that we're going to put on the best product that we can for the audience coming to see our event, and I'm excited for both of these. And give us a follow on Instagram at Cage Thunder MMA on Instagram or Cage Thunder on Facebook, and tickets and everything is available on CageThunderMMA.com, and we've got all of our full fights up on the Cage Thunder YouTube page as well. So lots of stuff out there, and I appreciate the time to give it a plug, Rick.
No problem. Yeah, because everything that you have been doing with this for your 20 years on the scene has been really, really incredible. And you mentioned a Luis Perez before, and I find it to be very, very intriguing, because here at my HOA, we have an employee named Luis Perez, very nice guy. And I wonder if he's been doing some colorful moonlighting, the likes of which I've not been informed about.
As a 125-pound professional MMA fighter not based out of Florida, that's quite the moonlighting.
He's not 125 pounds. Okay. So we've established, he's probably also twice the age of this guy as well. So, okay. So the coolest thing is that, like, do you remember, like, the one, I think, like, Miguel Perez from, like, the Barriquas back in the, like, the late
90s? Yes.
Like,
Harry Back Barriqua.
Yes. I think, like, and like his father, I think, was like Antonio Antonio Roca, if you remember from the 60s, big star there. His tag team partner, I think, was like Miguel Perez Sr. I think that was this guy's uncle. He was telling me this. Like, holy crap.
Of course it was.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, so that is hilarious. But yeah, Cage Thunder is the apex of the MMA world vis-a-vis quality. So yes, we'll be following everything you got going on there with that. And the apex of quality is always talking pro wrestling with you, Jake Diggeman, my great friend, great FDH Lounge dignitary. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence here to help break down WrestleMania 42, my man.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, and have a good one. Hopefully I'll see you on May 23rd at the show.
Yeah, I expect to be there. That is going to be awesome down there in Cleveland. I look forward to that, just as I look forward to every chance to talk to you and to see you. Thank you, buddy, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1917.